Welcome back to Spin Rate, the Athletics Toronto Blue Jays podcast. My name is Drew Fairservice, and yes, we're back for an emergency pod. Not an emergency labor relations pod. We're going to leave that to the experts, but we're here to talk about transactions, incoming, outgoing. It's been a crazy week around baseball. The Blue Jays made some moves, made a big move, a bit of a surprise, but a big move nonetheless, signing Kevin Gausman for 5 years. And I can't do this alone. I can't do this at all. So I need to call in the expert. She covers the Toronto Blue Jays for The Athletic. Her name is Caitlin McGrath. Caitlin, I pronounced your name correctly, and now you're here. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah.
I did the best okay. That I could.
It's okay. It's a tricky name.
Very tricky, yes.
You know.
But we're here. Again, this is Spin Rate, as I mentioned off the top. Thank you so much for dialing us up. If it is your first time, welcome, where we talk about the Toronto Blue Jays, and we have for this is the coming to the end of our first year of Spin Rate. Looking forward to many more.
It's going to be our big season finale soon.
Season finale soon enough, as their labor relations thing is probably going to scuttle any more transaction talk, but we do have lots of transactions to talk about. If you do like what you hear and it is your first time, do us a favor and dial it up here at Spin Rate. Wherever it is you get your podcast, subscribe. Give us a rating, give us a like, give us a comment, a review, but make sure you subscribe to the show. So when we do these impromptu transactional shows, you're ready for it. It's right there in your device as soon as you take it upon yourself to check it. And if you haven't already, of course, this is an Athletic podcast. I want to make sure that you subscribe to The Athletic. I want you to go to theathletic.com/spinrate and sign up if you haven't already. Get yourself a tidy deal. There was quite the deal on for Black Friday. If you missed it, you're not missing out on any content. So make sure you sign up regardless. Let them know that we're coming, that we sent you, I mean. That what I mean? Yeah. Let them know that we sent you. Sign up for The Athletic. Get a tidy deal no matter what. Black Friday or otherwise. Cyber Monday. Giving Tuesday. Wherever the hell we are in the calendar. Sign up for The Athletic. Be first to know. Be first to read the breakdowns, the analysis, the insight of Caitlin, of Keith Law, of Evan Drellich, and Ken Rosenthal as they go deep on the labor situation as the union fights for their share of the very large and ever-growing pie in the world of Major League Baseball. But who knows what's going to come of this labor situation, if it's going to be long, it's going to be short, as we are recording here on Tuesday evening. There are still negotiations going long into the night. But there is a lot of pie to be divided up, as baseball has lost its goddamn mind the last week, just throwing money around hither and yon. Including your Toronto Blue Jays, who, as I mentioned off the top, signed Kevin Gausman to a 5-year, $110 million contract. Caitlin, What do you think? That's a lot of money.
Yeah, it is a lot of money. I mean, they sort of have said for the last number of years, including this year, that they had the money to spend and they were going to spend it. And they kind of targeted starting pitching as a real need this offseason, and so you could kind of guess from that a bulk of their budget was going to be devoted to getting an impact starting pitcher. And off the top of the show, you said maybe kind of a surprise, but Kevin Gausman is a guy that they've liked for a while. There was last offseason where they wanted to sign him. They had interest in him, but ultimately he ended up taking the qualifying offer with the Giants, which proved to be a really good move for him personally. Sort of that bet on yourself 1-year deal. He ended up having just as good, if not a better year in 2021 than he did in 2020, just two very good years in a row, and kind of launched himself into this offseason where obviously he was going to be making a lot of money in the Blue Jays. After he, you know, did not take their offer last year, they obviously made him a much more lucrative offer this year, and he accepted. And so, you know, he's a guy that they've liked. He's a kind of type of pitcher. You can see why they like him, and maybe we can get into maybe the sort of pros and some cons maybe, but there's cons with every guy that you sign. There's always risk when you, you know, sign a pitcher, but he's obviously the type they like. And so, yeah, it was maybe a little surprising because I think you've sort of illustrated this really well before, but I think it's always a little bit surprising when the Blue Jays are, you know, a team that we see top 10 spenders in free agency and handing out one of the biggest deals that we've seen so far this offseason. Like, it's always still a little surprising that they're a team doing that, but it's kind of been a pattern, right? For the last number of years, it's first started with Hyunjin Ryu with $80 million, and then George Springer last offseason with $150 million. That was a record deal for the franchise. And then they followed it up this year with the Brios, $131 million. And then this one. So it's been a lot of money. It's like close to like $470 million or something like that over the last, I guess, two years, dating back to 2019 with Hyunjin Ryu. So the Blue Jays are not, they're not afraid to spend money. And they went out there and basically got probably one of the top three pitchers on the free agent market this year.
Absolutely, yeah. I know that Keith Law had him as number two, I believe, on his board here at The Athletic. And, you know, Kevin Gausman had a great year. Did he win the Cy Young? Well, no, he didn't, in fact, win the Cy Young. But I think that your point is one that I agree with, because you were agreeing with me, in that, like, this is a bit, not uncharted territory, but it's just I'm still not used to seeing them go toe-to-toe and, like, come out on top. And then there were reports that Gausman took less. To join the Blue Jays, which is really, really interesting. And again, man, we sound like just like boring old, you know, shills, but like, you have to believe that the Blue Jays are making an impact in the league with their culture work and with the idea that this is a place that people want to play. And this is what all the kind of legwork and all the groundwork that a guy like Mark Shapiro has put in. Like, this, to me, this is what that work produces in the end, is guys want to play for you. Your own guys that you develop get better. And then when you are like, hey, we got a bunch of money, it's comparable to the money that the Mets are giving to you. But I don't know if you knew this or not, us, not the Mets. and then people are like, you know what? That's a great sales pitch. I'm on my way. It's more than just we're not the Mets, though, of course. It's that. We believe in what we're doing. Other players believe in what we're doing. We're showing results on the field. We're getting better. And it's not wrong to be like, well, they still finished fourth and they didn't make the playoffs. Yeah. But like, anybody with eyes and anybody who has a vested interest in the future of the franchise, like a guy who's committing the next 5 years of his career to them, can see that, like, I like where they're going. I like the pieces that are here. I like these players. I like this front office. Their sales pitch to me was convincing. And it doesn't take much of a couple conversations to be like, yo, is this stuff for real? And if there's somebody that you know, if you're Kevin Gausman and a player you played with, and again, this is the end result, or not the end result. This is the ongoing result of that kind of effort to build the face and the foundation for a successful franchise. And I don't know. I'm not going to lie. It's pretty fun to watch. It's a lot better than watching free agents walk away and guys being like, I don't want to play in Toronto, and making sure that Toronto's number one on every no trade list when it comes through. This is a bit of a change and not a bad one.
Yeah. I would also agree with everything you said. I feel like we're making a kind of a boring episode right now. We're just agreeing with each other, but, I hope maybe we get to hear from Kevin Gausman. I don't know that we will, because it's kind of a tight timeline by the time the team gets all the, you know, everything done with the physicals and all that kind of stuff. It takes a few days usually, and then typically they have a press conference, but obviously with the looming lockout coming Wednesday at midnight, basically, then I don't know that we'll have time to talk to him. So we might not really hear from him until the lockout ends. So we don't necessarily know all the reasons why he wanted to come here, but I think you kind of spelled them out. You know, culture, obviously the Blue Jays put a lot of work, I think, into those presentations they make. Not that every team does, like every team is trying to sell their city and their organization, but it's obviously worked pretty well the last number of times they've done it. You know, it worked on George Springer, and it's worked on Marcus Semien and all these other guys that have chosen to sign here. So they're obviously doing something right, presenting the city, presenting the organization. You can just see the way the Blue Jays play and who they have on their team, that they are certainly a team that you think have all the pieces to be a winning team. They were obviously very close in 2019, and most of their roster is so young, and they have a guy like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is finishing number two in MVP voting, and kind of looks like he'll be a perennial MVP candidate himself. And so I think the other thing too is somewhat helpful is that, like, sometimes when a guy plays in the AL East, like Kevin Gausman did for a while with Baltimore, he's probably seen a lot of Toronto and does have a sense of the city. And so sometimes when maybe it's harder to convince guys that played in the National League their whole career and they don't know anything about Toronto and they don't know what kind of city it is and what it would be like to live here. And, you know, some Americans and, you know, other players from other countries, they might just not have any experience being in Canada, being in Toronto. And I know, like, sometimes when you do these, like, player surveys or, like, you know, random anonymous surveys and ask players all these questions, like, I don't know that it's the favorite road city, because there's pretty good road cities, like players like going to New York and stuff like that. But Toronto does pop up every now and then as sort of an underrated city that players like going to. And so sometimes I think it's helpful when a player is familiar with the city, and Kevin Gausman probably is from, you know, the 5 or 6 seasons he played with the Baltimore Orioles. He would have pretty well known the stadium, the city, and everything like that.
We'll be right back with more Spin Rate, but first, check this out. Let me ask you a question then.
Okay.
And I think that this is the thing that's key to watch, or key to think about. Why Gausman and not Robbie Ray? If you had to guess, why did they sign Gausman and not Ray?
Well, I mean, looking how Robbie Ray's, like, contract with the Mariners came out, which was an opt-out, I think, after the third year, like, the dollar value and the length is obviously fairly similar. Robbie Ray got $115 million, so $5 million more. But the opt-out after year three is very player friendly. It's a huge advantage for Robbie Ray. If he goes out and has 3 good seasons, he can go back onto the market and make even more money. And then the Mariners are losing their best pitcher after 3 years, when presumably their team would kind of be either entering or in the real, like, thick of their competitive window. I mean, I don't know how much we buy into their 2021, just given sort of like the run differential stuff, but they obviously do have a good team, a good young team. And so you would presume that in 3 years' time, they're right in the thick of competing. And so if that was something that Robbie Ray really wanted, and obviously his agent was able to get it for him, so if that was something that the Blue Jays did not want to give, and I don't, you know, they're not opposed to opt-outs necessarily. I think Berríos got one in his contract, but quite a bit later. And so obviously Kevin Gausman did not get an opt-out. I don't know that he didn't ask for one, or he asked for one and the Blue Jays didn't give him one, or whatever, how it unfolded. But obviously the contract is such that he signed for 5 years guaranteed. That's a lot safer for the Blue Jays. And so I think if you look at the pitcher types, they're kind of not similar pitchers in the sense that they kind of operate differently. Like, Robbie Ray is obviously more reliant on his fastball velocity and the slider and working off that, whereas Kevin Gausman's, it's basically the splitter does a lot of work for him, and then he works the fastball off of that. They're both two pitch pitchers primarily, and they have other ones that they can work in. They're both kind of, more recently for Kevin Gausman, but always for Robbie Ray, is they're big strikeout guys. Like, they get a lot of swing and miss, and so that's something. I think the difference, and maybe you can add to this, because it seems like you've kind of been looking at some numbers or something, but I think something, Robbie Ray's a little bit younger, but not much younger, I think. But one thing is, like, maybe you feel a little safer with Kevin Gausman because he's not so reliant on the fastball velocity. His kind of best pitch is the splitter, an off-speed pitch. It's like, it's not so much looking for that velocity. Whereas Robbie Ray, as much as he, you know, doesn't necessarily show any declines right now in that velocity, but it's always a riskier bet, betting on a guy that purely relies on velocity. And also, Robbie Ray's success was so linked to his improve command, which was great this year, but you have to look at the track record and maybe you have to wonder a little bit. So maybe those are some reasons. I would think it would come down to more so the money in the contract as opposed to the type of pitcher, though. But the Blue Jays obviously feel fairly safe that Kevin Gausman can kind of really easily slip into the spot that Robbie Ray had. And I think will kind of deliver similar results if you kind of look at how they match up and what they do well.
Well said. I think that one thing I would say that I don't disagree. I think Kevin Gausman obviously, you know, still needs velocity. Not quite as dependent on it as Robbie Ray, especially as a guy who has not ever struggled with the walks as bad as Robbie Ray did for so long. But I think the thing with Gausman is he's got to be able to throw his fastball up in the zone past people in order to make his splitter work down. Right. Yeah, so if his fastball is not a weapon up, he's in trouble. But I think that the advantage of a splitter is the splitter is a pitch that has a lot more neutral platoon splits. So it's not, mm-hmm. it's a weapon against lefties and righties. I think it's probably a bit of a better weapon against lefties. It really gives him something that's going away from the barrel and can miss a lot of bats with it. But it is interesting because they do have that similarity of being kind of two pitch pitchers. And even though, you know, Gausman has thrown his third pitch through it a lot more than Robbie Ray, but it's definitely just something to kind of get guys off his splitter, which again, he's a two pitch pitcher. And I think that some of the stuff I was reading, it was just about how much he's been, was unlocked when he went to San Francisco in particular, where mm-hmm. they just said like, go nuts. Like if that's what you're going to do, if you're going to throw, be a two pitch guy, if you're going to throw your splitter all the time, throw the splitter all the time. And, you know, not only does he not walking, is the walks aren't the same threat as they had been with Robbie Ray, but also the home runs are not the same kind of threat as the, you know, we saw with Robbie Ray, who in fact, you know, gave up a lot of home runs. He's off to a place where that probably won't be as much of a problem anymore. But I don't know, it's really exciting. The one thing I don't know if it was even a joke, but like talking about how much Kevin Gausman likes playing in Toronto. He did hold batters in Toronto took him to town to the tune of a 824 OPS, which is pretty high, but it's not, his overall numbers in that Toronto was, are, that are was not the bad. Old,
that was the old Kevin Gausman.
Exactly. Exactly.
The Blue Jays are getting the new Kevin Gausman.
He's pitched 15 times at the Rogers Center, only allowed 8 home runs. So that's not bad. I'll take that. But yeah, it's a good signing. It's a guy that obviously it's a good signing. It's a signing. Who would ever sneeze at this? You just hope that he can get, obviously you the concern is health, as it is with any pitcher. And just the ability to make his stuff work, but I think it's a nice complement as well in the Blue Jays rotation because with Gausman with Hyunjin Ryu with Jose Berríos, Alec Manoa, and then whoever else, Nate Pearson plus whatever it's going to take them to get through the season, that's a pretty good assortment of starters with still lots of time to go in the offseason.
Yeah, no, it's and it's the way it's shaping up. It's like that's their rotation for at least. Yeah, I mean the four guys you named would be signed, I think, through 2026. Berríos, Manoa, Pearson will be around until then, and then obviously Kevin Gausman, and then Hyunjin Ryu obviously would be leaving. I guess 2 more years. Does he have 2 more years? Time is such a blur with the pandemic, and especially like Ryu's like time with Toronto has just like obviously been in completely coincided with the weird times, and so I always have a hard time remembering like how many years Ryu has been on this team and like all this stuff, because it's just like that time period for me is such a blur. But yeah, like the Blue Jays, and like I said, it probably just goes back to that point, is they just feel probably a lot more comfortable knowing they have 4 guys through 2026, and they don't have to sort of look ahead to a season like, you know, 2 or 3 years when they lose Ryu, and then like say they had a guy like Ray that he, you know, they gave him the opt out, and then he's walking in 2023, and then they're kind of, or 2024, I guess it would be, right? I don't know. I can't do math. But yeah, so It's a good signing for the Blue Jays. I think they're probably happy with it, obviously. And it seemed like they kind of struck at the right time also. Like everything was sort of starting to happen. And it did seem like there was a swell of definitely starting pitchers, but then it kind of carried over to position players as well, kind of wanting to sign, obviously. And, you know, I think sometimes with free agency, like not to, maybe we can get into this later, but when Steve Cohen, you know, tweeted about obviously the Steven Matz situation where, you know, they thought that they were going to get a last chance with Steven Matz, or they thought that, you know, they could make it work or whatever it is. It's like, I think with, and then some subsequent people were tweeting about it. Just, you know, Ken Rosenthal was tweeting about like, this is how sort of agents work and this is how it goes. And just, I think the sentiment is like with front offices, it's like, once they think they have a guy, they just kind of almost want to do it because they don't want to lose it. They don't want to necessarily say, let me go back, let me talk to someone else. Or like, you know, I think once it seems like there's a deal in place and you're relatively happy, like you just make that deal. And so obviously the Blue Jays were at a place where they were just comfortable saying, okay, Kevin Gausman, we know he wants to be here. Let's just make the deal. And, you know, maybe in another alternate universe, they would have kept Robbie Ray if situations had been different, but just seems like the way things lined up. And if they were sort of like, you know, this is a sort of 1A, 1B scenario, we don't necessarily care. We just want one of these type guys to lead our rotation. And Kevin Gausman was the one that was deciding first, and it worked out. And that's who they got. And they had to get someone. And so it seems like there was some urgency to sort of just make it work and get one of those pitchers because they were going fast at that point. Like at this point, I mean, I don't know off the top of my head who is sort of the remaining sort of ace-like, like Clayton Kershaw, but obviously there's a lot of questions with him, and Marcus Stroman's still out there, but he wasn't coming back to the Blue Jays. And so like there was kind of the number of players, the number of pitchers that might have fit that profile that they were specifically kind of looking for. There was not that many, and they kind of had to strike.
Yeah, and I like that they went for a guy who's not as much of like a project like John Gray, right? Where there's not as much doubt. I think that there's something to be said for this sort of like planned obsolescence model that they're working with, where they're, you know, the last 2 years of Ryu will be declined, but so they've got somebody in at his peak, so that, you know, as Ryu's on his way out, then you'll hopefully get some more good and productive years from Gausman, and then as he slides away, you still got Manoah in his ascendancy, you still got Berríos, and then you've got your lottery ticket with Pearson, which
sure.
No one knows what's going to come from Pearson, but there's a lot of hope around him, of course, though.
It does feel like there's like a nice, there's like tiers to their rotation. And like Mark Shapiro like talked about that. And I don't know that he's talked about this a lot before, but he did talk about it a lot in his most recent time he talked to us. And it was interesting, like just him explaining how roster building is not always, is not only just like putting guys into positions, but it's also like planning a roster so that when some guys are maturing, it also aligns with the time when other guys are just getting to their peak. And then when those guys are getting to their peak, you have other guys that are like kind of knocking on the door, and that everything is always timed out. And then, you know, when you're spending on this amount of players, it all kind of like comes together. It's like a puzzle. It's like building this whole puzzle with intricate different pieces and prices and all this kind of stuff. But it does feel like now that you're seeing how they're building the roster, you can kind of see almost the timelines like within the guys and then within the roster. Like you can kind of see, okay, these are the peak years when you're going to like see this guy move to a lesser role in the rotation and this guy's going to take over and all that. You can kind of see how it would all come together and mature along.
So I got two questions for you before you move on.
Okay.
This is like hot take o'clock here.
Okay.
Which pitcher starts on opening day for your Toronto Blue Jays if the roster is as it is? Yeah. Well, who starts on opening day? No matter what move they make, they're not bringing in someone else, I don't think, who's going to start on opening day.
I think it's Kevin Gausman, but also it could be Berríos. But it's one of those two. Opening days in Baltimore. I don't know that teams...
It's not quite what it used to be, right? There's a lot of talk about...
And teams don't align. Like, if they're not starting the season at home. It's not like teams necessarily align their rotation to be like, but here's where we'll be in the home opener and this will pitch. Like, they kind of just want the five in the order they want, and whoever starts in the home opener starts in the home opener. You know, I don't know. It could be Kevin Gausman. It could be Berríos. I don't know.
Cowards. They should come right out and be like, opening day starter is this guy. If they're knowing that they're starting on the road, as you've just enlightened me to, that means that they must make Manoah start the home opener. Then let the king of vibes ascend to the peak of Vibes Mountain. And then the other question is, over the life of Kevin Gausman's contract, who is going to be a more productive player? Will it be Kevin Gausman or Robbie Ray? I just like snuck in this like,
oh, I don't know.
Ridiculous question.
Well, I mean, I'm going to plug my colleague, Eno Saris.
There we go.
Who wrote a really good, interesting piece where he actually looked at who will age the best of three pitchers, all somehow linked to the Blue Jays, Robbie Ray, Marcus Stroman, and Kevin Gausman. So I won't reveal the ending, but if you want to read that piece, he does come to a conclusion of who he thinks is the best pitcher to bet on long term.
I think everyone should.
I think they're all decent bets long term.
I like that. Everyone's good. I've been blocked again. I keep getting blocked on Twitter. I got to stop getting blocked by clowns, even though they deserve even worse. They don't deserve to see my tweets. The Blue Jays also made another deal. Mm-hmm. For a free agent pitcher, a reliever. I don't want to mispronounce this gentleman's name. Is it Yimi Garcia?
Yimi? I believe so.
Yimi? I don't want to do it wrong. Was it 2 years plus an option? He was a closer for the Marlins at one point this season. A lot to like. Indulge me. Tell me what I need to know about Yimi Garcia. Yimi, it is.
Yimi. I think it's the type of reliever they're looking for. He's been fairly durable. I think he had Tommy John, I want to say a couple years ago. But since then, I think since 2019, he's pitched 135 innings or something like that. I wrote about it a couple days ago. And so I'm just trying to I should have pulled up my piece, but I'm just trying to talk here from memory, but just generally, you know, pitches a lot of innings and it's been reliable. He's kind of probably more of a 7th-8th inning guy as opposed to a closer, especially on the Blue Jays. I think they're better off keeping Jordan Romano where he is. But he definitely, it's not a bad idea to have another guy who has that experience pitching in the 9th inning. I think with the Marlins, he was obviously a closer. When he went to Houston, he was more used in any kind of middle to late relief role. And he can kind of pitch in all that and all those different situations. And so I think that he will be reliable. I think he's basically hovers around average, slightly above average. I think there's a lot to like about it.
Yeah, I think it's pretty, it's just a tidy bit of business.
Kind of a reliever they need. And
I haven't looked closely at his arsenal, but again, a guy who over the last 3 years, as you mentioned, so he had Tommy John in 2017. Like, he missed all of 2017. Mm-hmm. 2018 was obviously a year coming back. Pitched, you know, still pitched quite a bit, but then 2019 with the Dodgers, 2020 with the Marlins, and then last season split between the Marlins and Houston. It wasn't great with Houston, but I didn't get that many opportunities to pitch. As you noted, he was sort of just a depth guy in a team that was, you know, trying to build a bullpen that was going to win the World Series. But, you know, this is what a win now move looks like, right? This was a little, you know, not depth, not like a, you know, nothing. There's nothing a lot of, most fans hate than the idea of like dumpster diving. Like, oh, we signed this guy in a minor league deal, and you know, some of those deals that have worked out for the Blue Jays. This isn't that. This is a bit more higher profile. There's a bit more money involved, and it's a guy that they just believe can do the job back there.
Yeah, he throws pretty hard. Mm-hmm. I just pulled up his Savant page, and now I'm remembering when I pull up the page. Like, he throws 96 fastball. He has also good spin, which is like something the Blue Jays kind of always look for and like. So, you know, fastball spin is a 95 percentile on Savant, and then the curveball spin is 83 percentile. So obviously like one of the better spinning curveballs and one of the better spinning fastballs. And he actually has a lot of pitches, for a reliever. He has like four or five pitches that he uses. So that's always interesting to have. And I think probably has some more swing and miss, in his game, by comparison to some other Blue Jays relievers. Like obviously Simber and Meza in particular are more reliant on, getting ground balls and pitching to contact. And so he will kind of give a different look, I think, to the Blue Jays in that mix. So it's just like another reliever that Charlie can use in those situations. And it looks a little different than Simber, and it looks a little different from Meza and even Trevor Richards, obviously, with him relying on more of his changeup.
Interesting. Go ahead.
No, I didn't have another point. I want you to make yours.
What I was going to say is I mentioned that he went from the Marlins to the Astros at the trade deadline. And if you look at how he was attacking hitters, he changed things up a little bit. He definitely went away from his slider when he went over to Houston, added a sinker in that he had kind of shelved as a pitch that he kind of goes back and forth with, de-emphasizes changeups considerably. Again, a bit of a fringy offering, but like, and then threw a ton more curveballs. So, you know, you mentioned his spin, curveball spin was something that has grades well for him. You know, the Astros are not afraid to shy away from those sorts of things. And, you know, I had Kevin Goldstein on the show, and they talked about a guy like Colin McHugh, who had a really high spin curveball, and the team was like, throw that more, give it a shot. So, that's something to watch, I think, is what kind of arsenal does he have, or what is it that with those kind of building blocks, those things that the Blue Jays love, as you noted, the spin, the high spin fastball and a high spin curveball. How do the Blue Jays try to make that work, and how do they sort of approach and kind of tweak his arsenal? As again, he basically stopped throwing his slider to left-handed batters altogether. So something to watch. Again, as you said, a guy with a lot of pitches and a guy with a lot of I don't know if tools are the way to describe those sorts of attributes, maybe. So lots for the Blue Jays for Pete Walker and Matt Bushman and the team to really work with as they look to find a role for a guy that's at the back of the bullpen is looking pretty solid, pretty interesting. And again, I think you can't, you know, there's always a lot of volatility in any reliever. So the more depth you can build, the more things that you can add to kind of weather that stuff. If Adam Simber, you know, gets found out as a guy who throws 83 miles an hour next year, maybe you can move him down. And if Yimi Garcia has a lot more to offer, you're the Blue Jays, you're probably feeling like you're in a pretty good spot.
Yeah. One thing you mentioned just those sort of non-sexy minor league deals. But one minor league deal that caught a lot of people's attention this week, obviously, was one that I think some of us maybe could see coming, was Blue Jays are bringing back David Phelps on a minor league deal. And presumably this would be a situation where, you know, you sign a guy that you like to a minor league deal, you invite him to spring training, but he's definitely looked at as a very real candidate to make the team so long as he's completely healthy. And I think that's kind of what we saw last year, I believe, with Tim Meza. Like he was signed to like a minor league deal or a situation like it was like that. And then he really had a great camp and emerged as
they had a great year.
He had a great year, of course, but it's all started with a great camp. Absolutely. And so I think that would be the situation with David Phelps, is that if he goes out there and has a good camp, looks to be healthy, and is, you know, throwing like he normally throws, I would say he's a good bet to make the team, which would be just another guy that just gives them that continued depth for anywhere between the sixth and eighth inning. He's also a little different arm too. Like he tends to throw a lot of fastballs and just throws them in the zone basically. Mm-hmm. And he was really good for them last year. And I think one thing that I've mentioned before when someone asked me about the potential for him coming back is that one thing that maybe you can kind of like about it or maybe feel cautiously optimistic about was that his season-ending injury was a lat strain or it was a severe lat strain that was needed surgery, but it wasn't to do with his arm, right? Like it wasn't elbow, shoulder, anything like that necessarily. So you're hopeful maybe.
I agree. And that is the right perspective to have on it, but it's also a little bit sick in the way that we think about these things. Like Shoulders are kind of like DEFCON 5 and elbows are like DEFCON 3. And this guy, I don't know exactly what the nature of his injury, but it's like, oh yeah, all he did was like detach the muscle straight from his rib cage. Fine. He's good to go.
He'll be okay.
He'll be fine. Put some ice on it. We got ice. More spin rate coming up right after these words from our sponsors. Now let's set aside the rosterbatory section of the show for now. Let's move on. We talked a little bit about Robbie Ray. He got five years and $15 million from the Seattle Mariners, a team that you falsely described as up and coming, when in fact, they're trash.
But I think actually when we talked about this, I just want to make a point and prove that we know what we're talking about. That I think when we were like at the end of the season, we were bandying around like where they could go. I think we actually mentioned the Mariners as a landing spot for both Semien and Ray. And for a while, it looked like Seattle really wanted Semien, and they very well may have really wanted him. Obviously, Texas wanted him more, but it's kind of funny, and it's also not surprising that one of those two landed there because I think it really made a lot of sense. They were kind of in a similar stage. They're kind of looking for similar things that the Blue Jays were. So good for Robbie Ray. And I think you mentioned it, but I think the stadium will suit him well there.
And an exciting team with an exciting outfield around him to chase down all those fly balls and pull back some of those home runs. I hope, Kyle Lewis is a guy who's, Jared Kelenic and then Julio Rodriguez are probably the bigger names, but I love that Kyle Lewis. He's a really good ball player. I'd love to see him liberated from Seattle. And I thought Marcus Semien was a great match there as well, but instead he goes to Texas for 7 years, $175 million, to which I say, that's amazing. Way to go, Marcus Semien. I also want to say, take a brief moment to pat myself on the back for being like, he's going to get that big money. I was talking about today with somebody and like there were people seriously, sincerely being like, I think I'd offer Semien 4 years and $80 million. Like, bro, that is not going to get it done. But nevertheless, that's a huge amount of money for a great player, for a really durable, someone that everyone around the team spoke of so highly. They loved his work ethic, his production, obviously, because he was really, really good, and his professionalism. Bobichet, as we've discussed, was really rattled, just emotional, talking about how much Semien meant to him. And Texas, similar to Seattle, looking around, being like, well, we don't have any good players. We should probably go get some. So, of course, they signed Semien 7 years, $175 million, and then a gargantuan contract for Corey Seager, which from right now, it sounds like Corey Seager will be the shortstop and Marcus Semien will be the second baseman. We'll see how long that lasts.
Yeah, but, someone wrote about that. I can't remember. Maybe a few people have mentioned it. Maybe it was Keith Law, actually.
It was.
That he mentioned exactly as you say, that's what we would expect, but they'd be better off swapping that or moving Corey Seager to third base and having Marcus Semien at shortstop. And then filling second base some other way. I think they have some internal options.
Anecdotal eye test, but watching the Dodgers and watching Corey Seager this fall in particular, I did not feel confident about his play at shortstop. He, as Keith wrote in his story about Seager's been through, went through Tommy John, and just hasn't really been quite the same defensive player. But the Rangers, they gave him a significant amount of money. 10 years was $320 million or something. Because when Corey Seager is on, he is like an MVP caliber player. That doesn't make the Rangers good. I think that's the thing to remember. They signed Semien and Seager and John Gray, but they're still the Rangers. and they're still really lacking in the top end talent, especially the internal kind of guys, other than whenever they drafted Mark Leiter. So those are the big ones. That's way out of the Blue Jays price range, I think. 175. The Blue Jays were never going to get there with a player like Marcus Semien. While we can talk about them being the new Blue Jays and things are different, that's a lot of that. I can't see them going there with him.
No, I think the key point is with him, and I don't mean that in any disrespectful way to Marcus Semien. Like, it doesn't work for their roster construction. It doesn't work for their current priorities and how they envision their club in 3 or 4 years. Like, they need to reserve money for a big contract for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette. Like, that huge shortstop contract needs to be offered to Bo Bichette, and they need to have the room for if and when he accepts it. So they can't, $480 for Marcus Semien, they would have signed that if he would have taken it, and that would have worked in their budget, but that wasn't going to happen. Mm-hmm. Like, and so it just, as much as they would have loved to keep him, I just don't think the stars were ever aligned. It's kind of the opposite of last year. Last year, the Blue Jays and Marcus Semien were both in the right place at the right time, and they found a great deal, and it worked. It's unfortunate that the team fell short, because I think when you look at losing, Semien and Ray in particular, will be, two of the greatest ever kind of like one hit wonder type players. Well, I mean, Robbie Ray is a little bit more than 1 year, but obviously this 1 year was special for him. To go down in history, like, they will be, two of the most memorable, great 1 year only Blue Jays. So it's unfortunate that the stars didn't align in terms of the team going deeper, because I think they obviously had the talent for a playoff run and all that. And so, yeah, in a perfect world, the Blue Jays probably would have wanted to keep the gang together, but it's just not how it works. And there was other teams that were going to be willing to pay Marcus Semien a lot of money. And I think it's not even so much the money thing, although 175 would have priced them out, but it's just the term as well. Like, paying Marcus Semien 7 years till he's 37, just knowing how much the Blue Jays are going to have to be devoting to their payroll in 2023 and 2024 and 2025 when Vlad and Bo start to get expensive, and even you're talking about Teoscar needing to see if he's going to stick around, and even, other players as well. And so, it was not going to happen, but as you say, and I agree with you, good for Marcus Semien. He deserves it. It's a great, it's a great thing to see, I think, when a player, takes those 1 year deals, and it really works out, and they bet on themselves and they make a lot of money, as they should. And it's, Marcus Semien will probably go down as, one of the nicest, greatest players that I covered. Just, I would agree with everyone that praises him. He was great to deal with. He was great to watch. It was definitely a fun year, but, I think the Blue Jays, have a lot to look forward to even without those players, but
It's the way the game played, right? Like, this was the whole deal. If you could make it work, if you're the Blue Jays with Marcus Semien, I'm sure they would have loved to do it. My sense is that the pillow contract, 1 year, $18 million, was just too good to pass up. And they knew what they knew about him. And then after having him around for a year, I can only imagine that increased the interest that they would have had in having him be a Blue Jay for a long time. But this is his chance to get out there, to get that money, to cash in on his amazing season in 2021, after his amazing season in 2019, after his very good season in 2018. Like, it's a really good player who's not being paid like a really good player. Not exactly a well-kept secret anymore. I do think that he's below like the Kawhi tier of like one and done Toronto sports legends.
Yeah, of course.
I would also say that he's definitely going to be below the David Price tier of like one and done, half and done Blue Jays legends.
Yeah, I think because he doesn't have any playoff experience or any playoff games to show.
I think the pandemic affected that. Marcus Semien is also like a pretty quiet guy. Like, he's quiet, he's unassuming. I think he's I think there'll be, we will think more often, or maybe not more fondly, more regularly about Robbie Ray. And then I'm doing hand tears on camera that Caitlin can see, but no one who's listening can see. I think he's going to be below Robbie Ray because it's a bit more quiet, because it's a bit more like, it's the kind of thing where you'll be on Baseball Reference like 5 years from now and you'll be like, wow, man, Marcus Semien had fucking 45 home runs. Like, like that's the kind of,
for the Blue Jays.
Remember when he played for the Blue Jays? Yeah. That's crazy. yeah, shout out to those two guys. Steven Matz. Did we talk about Steven Matz? No, we didn't. No, this is.
I don't think so. Cause I think.
No, we didn't.
Last time we recorded.
Yeah. I talked about it on the radio a little bit. Mm-hmm. Steven Matz, 4 years, $44 million, which is, again, I think a bit more about the question of term. It's definitely in line with the kind of spitballing that we did on our show. Cause we, the Jay Happ 2016 deal sort of serving as a bit of a blueprint of 3 years and 36. I think realistically 4 years and $44 million for Steven Matz is fine. I don't have any problem with it. The thing that I said, and I was, oh yeah, we were talking about this. You know, the Cardinals are no fools, right? The Cardinals are not the Rockies who are just sort of groping around in the dark.
Yeah. Like,
if they believe that Steven Matz can projects to be his health and his velocity and all those sorts of things and the changes that he made midseason are the kind of thing that can help him to remain productive for 3 of those 4 years or 2.5 of those 4 years, I don't want to appeal to authority, but it's like There's something there, right? And it's not a gross overpay. And 4 years isn't crazy, unless you think he's a health risk, which I don't. Any other than the fact that he's a pitcher, I don't know how you would run around and say that he's a bigger health risk than anybody else out there. And he only has to be, if he's league average for even 2 years, that deal pays for itself in my mind. So shout out to Steven Matz.
Yeah.
Again, if you're the Blue Jays, you'd rather invest that roster spot and that money in Kevin Gausman and some other guys with higher ceilings. But
to add something is like, if just say in a scenario where like the Blue Jays may have matched or come a little closer, I mean, Steven Matz may have wanted to go to the Cardinals. I think it's actually a really nice fit for him, maybe even better than the Blue Jays, given the type of pitcher that he is. Pitches a lot to contact, and the Cardinals have the best defense in the majors, certainly the best defense in the National League. He's a National League pitcher for a long time. Maybe he wanted to go back to the NL. Although I don't know that he's going to get a chance to hit anymore, because I think the universal DH is coming. But anyway, like, and I think the ballpark, I don't know much about Busch Stadium, but I think everything that I've read is that it's fairly pitcher friendly. And so also Steven Matz has been a little bit home run prone over his career. And so pitching in that ballpark might help him as well. And so I think that's other things that, you know, we always have to consider, is that sometimes players, at the end of the day, it is going to come down to money. But if you're kind of splitting hairs, then it can come down to situation and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, like you said or alluded to, like the Cardinals are a pretty storied organization. They had a good season this past year, obviously having that crazy win streak and then getting to the postseason. And they still have a pretty good team. They have some good young players on that team. And it's obviously a good fit for Steven Matz. So I think that he is a player that the Blue Jays were kind of aiming to get two starters, but I think they can also live if they don't necessarily replace Steven Matz right away. But I also think there's going to be options. Like there's going to be, I haven't seen the list because it's probably coming out right now, but maybe there's some non-tender guys that have become available. Like you can probably find, like maybe there's another Steven Matz type out there. Obviously when the Blue Jays traded for Steven Matz, it was not like, people kind of met that trade with a shrug. He was coming off a bad year with the Mets. He kind of had an up and down career at that point, kind of rarely living up to maybe that potential he had as a younger player when he was drafted. And the Blue Jays unlocked something. And so I think that over the last couple of years, they've had a fairly good eye for projects that have worked out. Obviously not every single project works out, but they've landed on some good ones recently. And so maybe there's a trade out there. I know we've talked about some of the bigger name trades, but you know, sometimes like not, I don't know that last year we thought, oh, Steven Matz is a trade candidate, but they went out and got him. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's always those possibilities that they can go out there and trade. But I also think that there's some depth in the organization, like a Ross Stripling could fill in a starter role until you're maybe comfortable with Nate Pearson, or maybe you kind of use that fifth role in some creative way where you're using Pearson for some shorter outings and having Stripling come out of the bullpen or whatever it is. But I think the Blue Jays have got another starter. Like, I'd be surprised if we get to spring training and we're talking about fifth starting competition only between like Stripling and Pearson and Kay and Hatch and all those guys. I think we'll see the Blue Jays get at least one more starter before spring training starts, and probably at least another reliever, maybe two, and probably an infielder.
One reliever that we won't see them get is Kirby Yates, who, of course, the Blue Jays had an ill-fated dance with as they signed a high-risk signing, and then he was hurt, who's now signed with Atlanta. A 2-year deal, as he, I guess, is set to miss. Missed the first year, which happens. That same thing that happened, I guess, with Ken Giles couple of years back, which, shout out Ken Giles.
He's with the Mariners.
Ken Giles with the Mariners?
Yeah, he's with the Mariners. One of the relievers that I was kind of like saying they should get this guy was Daniel Hudson, who was signed with the Dodgers. Mm. So that dream is dead. I liked Daniel Hudson when he was around in 2019. It was funny. The 2019 season was such a weird season to cover. And I remember like kind of waking up one day or getting to the work one day or whatever and realizing like Daniel Hudson's having a really good year. Like, I'm going to do a story on this guy today. Just like go over, talk to him. Just a lovely guy. Like, just a great, nice man to talk to. He has a great story that Ken Passan wrote about in his book,
Jeff.
The Arm. Oh, did I say Ken? Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Combining.
It's a good book, The Arm. A good book. Passan, I enjoyed it. Sorry. And I don't like sports books most of the time, so I liked it. Not that I don't like them. Anyway. Just don't bother with them. Shout out Daniel Hudson.
Shout out Daniel Hudson.
Got the last out of the World Series.
Yeah. But there's still a lot of relievers out there. Tons of relievers out there that the Blue Jays will have their pick to get a guy that can throw some trikes.
And just like, you know, the bet on yourself sort of mantra that we've heard, you know, of course, started with Fred VanVleet, and then, you know, sort of Marcus Semien and Robbie Ray, their pillow deals sort of speak to that. The Blue Jays, as an organization, have to bet on themselves and their ability to identify and acquire the next Steven Matz, to your point, guys who may not be on the radar. And I think it's important for us, especially if you're listening to this or you're me, and to a lesser extent, you, like, there are people who are sitting in the Blue Jays offices or more likely at home, and like their job is to find out, just to identify trade targets, to find someone who might be a little bit under the radar or be the one, a guy that's a good fit for them. So while we're like farting around on our phones or like while we're watching Succession and like thinking about this and that, that's their job. So that's where they uncover the next, these Steven Matzes or these potential trade targets. Cause there's obviously a million other moving pieces too. What could happen if one team's going broke or one team wants to cut costs or they need to offload this guy or he doesn't get along with the manager or he's this and that. So there's always a million moving parts and pieces that, to contribute to these somewhat unexpected moves, even though some of them tend to be a little on the obvious, not obvious, but you know, something you can see coming and others come right out of left field. So speaking out of left field, let's do a little bit of quick couple rounds of like rosterbation and just general rumor mongery. Chris Taylor, what do you think? Is there any truth to that? I mean, so let me ask you this then. Are the Blue Jays still in on free agents the caliber of Chris Taylor, Chris Bryant, other guys named Chris, or are we moved into the more bargainish type shopping stage?
I think they still are, because I think that if they had kind of mapped out their budget or like, you know, their payroll or what they have to spend, it feels like they obviously targeted a guy like Stephen Mast there. They were willing to like spend $11 to $12 million on per year or whatever as a pitcher. Obviously a high-end pitcher, it's spending more like, you know, $20+ million on per season. But it looks like they've sort of mapped out or planned for an infielder that they're spending, you know, a significant amount of money on. Obviously, if they were interested in Simeon, they had sort of a number that they would have been willing to pay him. And so I do think that there's probably still a chance that they can land a free agent infielder. And they probably like budgeted it and planned for it. I think you mentioned Chris Taylor, like that is a type of player that they really love. He plays all over the infield and outfield a little bit. I think he hits right-handed, hits for some power, which would fit right in with the Blue Jays. But I think especially defensively, he would be a good fit for the Blue Jays. I think second base would be his strongest position, but I think he can play third. The Blue Jays would probably have some internal options anyway of how they want to figure out. Chris Bryan, I think is a name that also has like been out there. Like he fits, obviously plays third base. And another name like Kyle Seager, is a possibility in the sense that he's out there. He plays third base, obviously not as young or as productive as his younger brother, Corey, but still hits for power. Doesn't really have the on-base skills potential that he had a few years ago, but I think he still plays pretty solid, average to slightly above average defense at third base. So he wouldn't need, or he wouldn't really warrant a long-term contract, obviously, but he could potentially be somewhat of a fit if the Blue Jays were looking there. There's trade possibilities as well with the infield. So I think that would probably be kind of, I don't know, hard to say, like where all these priorities are. I still think getting another starter is a fairly big priority. I think the infield is also a fairly big priority. And then I think they can return back to relievers a little bit later because those tend to kind of continue on very late into the offseason. We don't even know when the offseason is going to continue. True. Like there could be a real mad scramble in February where our teams are just trying to get everything done. Mm. But yeah.
Kyle Seager is an interesting one. I think he does. I think you said it right. He does play a nice third base. He is spectacularly bald. I think there's not enough. Yep. Not enough. You got to get the zooms on here to talk about Kyle Seager's bald pate dome. But his offensive numbers are not those that are inspiring a great deal of confidence moving forward. His on base percentage was what's the word I'm looking for? Piss poor. Just, you know, a little on the limited side. He does hit left. He does have some pop. What he is not is the name. I don't know. I don't think you mentioned it. Is the real infielder upgrade that the Blue Jays are ready to make. Mm-hmm. As there have been some rumors, hearsay, heresy, bullshit, more accurately, Freddie Freeman. Blue Jays have been rumored to be connected to Freddie Freeman, which
the great third baseman, Freddie Freeman.
Look, he doesn't need to play third base. Vlad can play third base. If you get Freddie Freeman on this Blue Jays lineup, you can play me at third base. It doesn't fucking matter. They're going to score so many runs. I have zero confidence that the Blue Jays are going to sign Freddie Freeman because they're not Atlanta. I can't imagine him leaving Atlanta. And then if he does leave Atlanta, I can't imagine him not becoming a Dodger after that. But, you got your hands aloft. What's the deal?
Oh, no, I was just stretching.
I thought you were going to make a big dramatic point. You look like me. You were like, I was like, here we go. We're 1 year into this thing, and Caitlin's got the demonstrative part down pat.
No, I was literally just stretching. But to make a point, Freddie Freeman could be a dream come true to play for the one Canadian baseball team in the majors, him being a proud Canadian by parents.
The proud child of proud Canadians. Let's not do what, I mean, look, I will never, ever, 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 and I've said this 100 times and I don't care, I'll say it again. I'll never forget when Freddie Freeman played for Canada at the World Baseball Classic. It was just such a delightful gesture. Yeah. And not only was it a delightful gesture, he played his ass off. And I've said it before. I feel like I've told the story too many times to even recount, but It was the last game. I can't remember who they were playing against, Canada, and they were about to get eliminated in like absolutely embarrassing fashion, as it is, you know, Canada at the World Baseball Classic. And there's Freddie Freeman. He's the last guy up. And they were down by two or three, and there was somebody, whatever the situation was, he had the potential to be the last out. And he didn't hit the ball very hard. He had like a dribbler down the line. And Freddie Freeman, who was born and raised in California, absolutely wearing a Canadian jersey, busting his ass down the line to first base, like running as hard as he could to try to beat out a grounder in a game that was over. He was out, game was over, but I was like, fucking Freddie Freeman, you are the king. I got you, Freddie Freeman. He's going to get like a 6-year, $180 million contract in the Blue Jays, just as we described with Marcus Semien. Seemed very unlikely to invest that kind of money in anyone. I would happily invest it in Freddie Freeman. He is really, really good. He is the Votto we were promised for all the years that we pined for Joey Votto to come home. And now we'll get the California equivalent of Joey Votto. But yeah, pipe dream, but a fun one, if nothing else.
It is fun. I'd be down for that.
Maybe Joey Votto too. You know, the Reds are...
Yeah, the Reds are going to trade everyone.
Not so Joey Votto.
Maybe...
They could go to his house and beg him, be like, please, Joey, can we trade you? And I get the sense that Joey Votto would be like, no, I'm good.
And they would be like, they would have to say, fine. Yeah. Like
they're like, I know we have a no trade clause. And he's like, that's right, I do. And that's the end of the conversation. I don't even know if he does have a no trade clause. There's no way they're trading Joey Votto. And Joey Votto said before he doesn't want to go. So, and that's his right. That's it. That's all I got. I don't think we need to delve too deep into the rumor part, because this is the part of the podcast that ages the worst. Especially if we sit here like spend time being like, hey, what if they signed Clayton Kershaw? And then they don't. So, Caitlin, what do you got coming up? What have you written this week, I guess, maybe? Let's look back. So we've talked a lot about it. We've talked about the transactions that have been made, that were not made. You wrote about Kevin Gausman in detail, did you not?
I did. Yes, I did. So people can read that now. And then probably in a couple days, I'll take another look at the roster, see what shape it is in based on some transactions they've made. And then we will do a lot of waiting around for whatever is going to happen.
I did a little pencil gesture, like to pencil it in. I want you to pencil David Phelps right into that roster. Because that feels like as de facto a guy who's going to make the team, as you said, as anybody. So a big week, a big and exciting week for the Toronto Blue Jays, an exciting week for the Toronto Blue Jays fans. It's a whole new era where we can say stuff like, oh, they'll never sign him. And then maybe they will. Because holy shit, they signed Kevin Gausman right out of nowhere. In the middle of the feeding frenzy of all feeding frenzies in big league free agency. Hopefully it portends labor peace, as that's like they can't turn their pockets inside out and be like, we're poor, we gave a 37-year-old guy $45 million a year to pitch. Like, doesn't fly anymore. So make sure you read everything that Caitlin writes over here at The Athletic. Make sure you go to theathletic.com/spinrate to sign up for The Athletic. It's just a tidy discount. Make sure you subscribe to Spinrate wherever we get our your podcasts. Will be there. Bring us in if you can. There's an RSS or all that whatever fancy stuff. Fancy. RSS readers, very fancy. Make sure you follow Caitlin on Twitter. Make sure you follow me on Twitter. Don't make sure you follow me on Twitter. No, I don't want to get blocked by more people. It hurts my feelings. And then, we'll see what happens. We'll have a couple. We have some fun ideas, things we've talked about. And you never know. Maybe there'll be another bulletin, an hour-long update bulletin, just rapid fire, an hour of banter about the whatever it is that is to come. So her name is Caitlin McGrath. My name is Drew Fairservice. We will talk to you next time.